Good evening, and welcome to the St. Petersburg by Night Podcasting Network. Tonight, we present to you our behind-the-scenes show, After Dark. Welcome, everyone, to the St. Pete by Night Twitch stream, where we play St. Petersburg by Night, a massive multiplayer 5th edition game of the World of Darkness, including Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse, and the game we're primarily going to be talking about tonight, Hunter the Reckoning. My name is Kent, also known as Misha Kent on all social media. I am the lead storyteller of St. Pete by Night, but here on After Dark, I'm just simply your host. After Dark is a program where we get to talk to the amazing individuals behind the scenes that make St. Pete by Night happen, as well as the incredible players and other important movers and shakers within the World of Darkness. And one of those important people, one of those important pillars from behind the scenes is going to be joining us. Go ahead and introduce her. Cole, hello. Good evening. Why don't you say hi to the nice people and introduce yourself properly?
Hey, everybody. So, as you know, I'm not going to beat that intro. I'm Cole. Cole Dark. Mama Cole, as some people call me. I'm basically floating around as a Hunter story, one of the storytellers here, but primarily Hunter storyteller on St. Pete.
Yeah, and the most recent returning subscriber, according to our latest list up there. So we've got your name on the screen twice. But Cole, you, before we even get into any of this, before we talk about you and your history, you have been one of the most supportive people of this entire endeavor since before its inception, since the idea spawned. You have been like a plus cheerleader. And so before I even launch into any of, you know, any of your accolades you've earned as part of the server, I can't help but stop and say how much I appreciate you and how much we wouldn't be where we are and we wouldn't be going where we're going if it wasn't for the kind of support that you've continued to offer. So I want to say that just right out the gate, that you are loved. You are appreciated not only by myself, but I know by your players. I know by our greater community, and you deserve every bit of affection and, you know, praise that is heaped upon you. So let's
leap. Making me blush, man. Making me blush. What are you doing?
Let's leap into your history with TTRPGs as a whole. I know a lot of people discovered Dungeons & Dragons, TTRPGs in general, during the pandemic, but I want to know kind of where your journey began. When did you first hear about TTRPGs? When did you first start to dip your toe in it? And what was that experience like for you?
Well, I sort of grew up in a very small country town here in rural Australia. No, I'm not in the outback. I don't look at red dust every day. I'm in dairy country. But as a result, there wasn't a lot. If you didn't play sports, if you weren't, you know, in the netball team or in the football team, there wasn't a lot for people like me who really wasn't that athletic. So I used to go and hang out. There was a Games Workshop store in my local town. I used to go hang out there, and a lot of the guys there would be playing Warhammer, D&D, a lot of other things. I never really got the opportunity to play, but I was always interested. And then I sort of grew up, moved away from my town for a bit. But during that period, like I should say, while I was a teenager, I was into a lot of improv, a lot of acting. Did a lot of script writing, prop designing. I did audio tech, sound engineering in high school, music industry skills certificates, things like that. Big into music. Then as I got older, sort of always dabbled in or wanted to dabble in D&D, but never felt like I had the time. And a mutual friend, a friend of mine, was like, hey, I'm running a campaign. Do you want to come and try it? I'm like, hell yes, finally. And that was about, 4.5, 5 years ago now.
Okay. So it's still fairly recent.
Very recent for me. And I've played 3 sessions with him. And because I brought a friend with me who had a big personality clash with the DM, they still wanted to play. I knew 4 other introverts who were interested. I'm the one that collects introverts everywhere I go.
That's an understatement.
All of a sudden, I was a dungeon master.
Okay.
Because all these people wanted to play, and no one, I was a collector, I was like the meeting point. So I dived in head first. Three sessions into playing D&D, and I was in its dungeon master.
And if I recall correctly, you were also the dungeon master for your home game, including your family, your children. You're the dungeon master for them as well, if I remember correctly.
Yep. And they're helping me build my homebrew world of Alcantor. So even now, still to this day, school holidays is when we run a lot of those sessions. And my teenagers now are DMs. And they're keen to learn about Vampire the Masquerade and World of Darkness. I'm like, turn 18, then we'll talk.
Yeah, it is definitely a more mature audience's game. I mean, just based off of the concept itself. So D&D was your first system that you were kind of exposed to and everything like that.
Fifth edition.
Fifth edition. Only 4.5, 5 years ago. Yeah, that had already been out for 5 years at that point, at least. So that was kind of the mainstream one. So that kind of interest and love of D&D, was that what kind of led you into TikTok and D&D Talk and that kind of whole community?
I had TikTok because I quit smoking and I needed a dopamine fix to keep me going through it all. And a week and a half later, I found a few people that are actually now on the server here. So Crafty Mirage, Took, I guess. I found them and there was a collective story they were telling together at the time. And I fell in love with it. And then through them, I met you. And I met so many other amazing people and just sort of fell into that and fell into a couple of one-shots with some people. And then you started promoting the idea of St. Pete. And I was like, count me in. I'm in. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm still not sure if that was a good idea, but it so far it's turned out for the best. That's absolutely kind of incredible, and I think a lot of people can relate to that story of like D&D being a great, or TTRPGs in general being a great way to meet people, especially from like an introverted place or from a place of, you know, social anxiety and awkwardness. It gives an activity, but a structured activity that allows you to kind of keep the space you need to feel socially comfortable, and enough of a distraction to keep people from kind of paying too much attention to you, like a lot of other social encounters would call for. What was your first? What was your first D&D character class? What did you start as?
A Tortle Grave Cleric.
A Tortle Grave Cleric. That's a, I gotta say, that's a pretty big jump into the deep end. Like, you see a lot of people basically start with a basic fighter or rogue or something like that, but you kind of took on something a little more complicated, and something about that doesn't really surprise me. You seem like a person who loves a challenge. As long as I've known you, you kind of like walk up to the bully in high school and punch them in the face. You're the person who's gonna, like, you know, take over the prison or something like that. So you like to kind of, you like hard mode, so to speak, which transitions us to the World of Darkness, where your first choice character was a Tremere. Again, a leap into the, like, yeah, I don't want to just learn basic vampire. I want to learn hard mode vampire of all the blood magic and everything like that. But we'll get to that in a second. Let's talk about how the transition was, like, what really appealed to you about the World of Darkness when I started promoting it? When you joined, what was that transition away from, like, D&D to a D10 system, a completely different system? What was that like for you?
D10 system itself, it's math. It's, to me, the dice, it doesn't matter what dice the system's using, it's, that is how you're telling the spreads, like, a storytelling aid between you and your ST, or as an ST, you and your players. For me, the more you described Vampire the Masquerade and the more you described World of Darkness, it held something that for me was missing from the other TTRPGs that I played. It held the human / monster almost element. That reality, that consequences, that gritty feel. That, yeah, you can play gritty, hard mode, crunchy D&D, but it's just not the same. It's that realistic setting. You are playing in a world you know. But we all know as humans, like, there's that little tingle on the back of the neck. Is something spooky happening? It's delving into that. Some people call it Uncanny Valley, whatever you want to throw it. It's delving into that, and that drew me in. The political, whatever it happens to be, but that realistic angle was like hook, line, and sinker. Yes, please, nom, 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 let me at it, you know.
Talked about that with a lot of people, that it is a very grounded setting because it's what we know. Like, and it's a very almost cerebral kind of system and setting in itself, because it is exploring all the things that you've kind of, all your own horror, all your own personal fears and anxieties and suspicions about the world, about secret societies, about, you know, the government, what's being driven by it, what's the force behind the, you know, everything that's happening, and what kind of impact these secret societies have. And that's really the basis of the World of Darkness, is that we don't know for a reason why things are the way they are, that we can't possibly comprehend the machinations going on behind all of the things that we take for granted or the things that we see on a day-to-day basis. So you got interested in the setting and probably bullied by me a little bit to try it out. What was that kind of character creation process like, making Alana Valmont the Tremere, and kind of that whole step-by-step of, like, building a new character and getting into the game? What was that process like for you?
Maybe it was a little bit sort of bounced around and chaotic, because when I first joined the server, there were some amazing, helpful people that were sitting around. They're like, you said to me, hey, chat to them, they'll give you a hand. And they were. They were awesome. They were amazing. But I still didn't know who she was. I'm like, I knew I wanted the name Alana. Sentimental reasons for me. But then you and I sat down and you were like, okay, tell me about it. Start with the human. And so I started with the human. I knew I wanted to link into a passion of mine when I was younger, which was archaeology and Dead Sea Scrolls and, you know, that kind of theological archaeology, which ended up leading really well into a storyline that became important, that I didn't realize would even be a thing. And you pulled that in beautifully. By the way, I love that. You pulled that in beautifully. But sitting down and creating the person and then thinking about where she would have gone. And I believe we discussed, she almost became a Nosferatu.
Yeah.
She was almost a Nosferatu. And then we talked about it and it's like Tremere felt right for what she was and who she was. And it was so close. She was almost a Nos.
Yeah. Well, and I think it worked out for the better, honestly, that she was a Tremere, seeing how the story progressed from there and kind of where it ended up going. I think that it could have worked as a Nos, but I think that there was so much that you did that worked within the kind of Tremere framework that had been set up in St. Pete, and she became a very necessary character in the long run to the stability of that clan moving forward, because it started out really strong, then, you know, it kind of got messy after a certain point, and you had to help kind of keep it all together until we could rebuild and kind of keep the framework going.
When you bring in that stick-in-the-mud university professor who had been sitting underneath the Clearwater Chantry for 30-odd years, hiding, and to be like, no. And the next minute, these young kids start coming in, messing up her library. She got so mad. Oh, my goodness, the amount of in-house jokes with Tremere about glitter, feet on tables. And I'm sitting here, like, cuddling my inner strict mum. Just like, trying to pull all these kids and rein them all in, basically. It was an absolute ball, and I loved every second of it.
Well, it's fortunate. It's fortunate that you had a lot of experience wrangling a bunch of unruly kids and being able to control all that. I'm sure it almost felt like a slice of home in the game itself, and maybe a little less the escapism that it's supposed to be. But I think that experience definitely served you well. What was your favorite kind of, or some of your favorite moments from the Illana character and the Illana story? Because eventually you hit a point where you wanted to try something new and transitioned over to Hunter the Reckoning. But before we get into that, what was some of your favorite moments about playing Illana, or some memorable things that occurred?
I absolutely adored watching, almost from an outside to a degree, the sibling relationship between Illana and Alex build. That was really, like, really genuine, and I really enjoyed that. And even now to this day, like, Lakar, who played Alex, we still call each other brother and sister as a joke. It's just something that happens. We still joke around and fight like siblings. And it's been a year, year and a half since I played Illana.
Right.
But it's still there. That was a good kind of bleed that sort of trickled out. I love it. But little moments were the things that were important for me with her. There was an interaction with Carmen very early on, where it was like they both saw through each other's facade and clicked, and they had a working relationship that no one probably would have guessed. And also being that individual that sits in the corner that people often would forget she was there. And people would just start talking. And they would just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And she would just listen to everything they said, which was a really difficult thing for me because I don't shut up.
Right.
So, playing a character that's quiet was the challenge. But she ends up being viewed as, and this is, I've got so much feedback, intimidating, intelligent, scary. And I'm like, she was so squishy, man. I must have done something right. But yeah, it wasn't really solid moments, but. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the big pitfalls of Vampire the Masquerade, and I think TTRPGs in general, is that you put a lot of thought, especially in St. Pete, and especially in World of Darkness and Vampire the Masquerade, you put a lot of thought into your development character. Like, we put people through their punches with backstories and knife blocks and, you know, character finalization and everything, that there's a lot of love and a lot of detail poured into those characters, that I think players fall into the pit trap of wanting to show it off. You know, they've put all this effort in, now they want to strut. They want to, you know, tell their entire life story. They want to lay it all out there. And that's something that I feel like World of Darkness, by its own nature, punishes. Information is power. So yes, you have all this information about your character, but it's really about picking your moment as to when to reveal that information and trusting your storyteller to provide perfect opportunities for that. But I think a lot of people just kind of do it day one. In their first encounter, they're there to tell their whole life story, talk about their enemies and their flaws and all this other stuff. And it's just kind of like, you just, quote unquote, lost the game. Like, you just gave away everything. And that kind of stuff is a currency. It's something that's meant to be sold and bartered and kind of traded and kind of dragged out of you. But that's again, a thing about Alana that you did really well is that you did keep all that close to your chest. And I think that a lot of people would be surprised to learn a lot of the things about Alana that were in her backstory and in her character that never got revealed over the year plus time that you played her, almost a year that you played her. That she was just, she kept a lot close to her chest. And I think that that's something that a lot of people could take. Kind of take an example from with characters going forward.
Well, I was actually talking about that with Mimic the other day, because one of Mimic's first character, Everly, the La Sombra, bearing in mind, for months before the first iteration of the game starting, Mimic and I and another group of people used to call each other the late night club, the late night group. We would sit in voice chat and just talk for hours. We really all got to know each other so well, and it was amazing. And then we started playing. And for a very important reason, Alana was petrified of the La Sombra. She was like staying as far away from the La Sombra as she could. And so poor Mimic playing Everly the La Sombra, she would come into a room, and I would, once I figured out who she was from Elysium's, I'd be like, Alana's going to very quietly pick up her books and excuse herself from the room. Apologies, I have somewhere else to be. And leave. To the point, I think, with the Succubus Club, Mimic tracked me down every single room, trying to pin me down for a conversation. And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, because that's so antithetical to you as a person. Like, you really stepped out of your own personal space, your own personal knowledge of social situations and the way you handle social situations. You really did take a character that was a complete departure from you as a person, at least as we know you now. You may have drawn upon past experience for that character, but it really was unexpected. I think a lot of people were surprised to see this completely different personality. And I think that's also the making of a really talented role player and character, is to be like, this is not the person we know at all. There's no mistaking that Alana is just a version of Cole. Like, no, this is a completely different person. And so, yeah, absolutely. You're the person who's going to hunt people down, not the person being hunted down. And I think that's just absolutely phenomenal. So, eventually, I remember we came to a point where you were looking to step away from the Alana character, that it was a lot of responsibility to handle at the time, that there was a lot going on in your life, and that you had taken an interest in Hunter the Reckoning, the newest system at the time that had come out, and that it would allow you some more freedom, kind of a break from the responsibility and the ins and outs of being the Tremere regent at the time. That you wanted to try something new. You just look for a fresh start. So we wrote off Alana in the way that we did. Then you made your character for Hunter the Reckoning. Kind of talk me through what, you know, inspired you about trying Hunter the Reckoning and not just making another vampire character. Like, what made you want to leap into Hunter as a system at the time?
I'm going to be honest, and apologies if I jump in and out, that's my internet at the moment. So if I am sketchy, that's joys of Australia in the middle of flood season, it's great. But for me, when the book was announced, and I actually bought a copy of the book, I managed to get one, which is hard, as you know, for me to get copies of things here. Sometimes with where I live. And I started reading the book and I fell in love. I'm gonna be honest, like, don't get me wrong, I love and I enjoy Vampire the Masquerade, and I've loved reading through Werewolf. It's been amazing. Hunter grabbed at a part of me, and it clicked with a part of my brain and the way I think more than any other TTRPG I've played, and I've played quite a few now. More than anything, I read it and it just went click, because it's that combination of the supernatural but still being human. It's that vulnerable element within the world of darkness that is, again, also terrifying for the supernatural. Like, and creating Axiel.
Yeah.
Axiel Rose, which was a couple of people's good old laugh at the joke, and goodness knows the amount of time she got the Axiel Rose joke in character. Alana was a nod to my high school years. And she was. She was a nod to, believe it or not, the quiet nerd that was at the bottom of every social pecking order. You wouldn't believe it now, but that's who I was. So she is a nod to that quiet 13-year-old version of myself who was obsessed with theology. Axiel was a nod to me coming through a different section of my life, where I was coming out of a place that was very dark. I was coming out of a place where I was healing from a lot of my past trauma. And she was so visceral to step into. A lot of people didn't realize what was kicking on behind the scenes. It used to take me a good half an hour to kick out of character with her every session I played with her. But I love diving into her personality and who she was, and a very heavy victim of trauma with a very abusive ex. That's not the direct correlation,
right,
but that was how she ended up being written and how it worked for her. And again, a very dark history, but seemingly a positive and carefree person on the outside. So the shift was disgustingly easy for me because of that connection I have with the system. It's really no other way to put it. It's, yeah.
And I think that's a true testament to this fifth edition Hunter the Reckoning system, because I think if you look back at previous iterations of the same system, I don't know if you would have gotten the same kind of enjoyment out of it as you have with the 5th edition one, because it was a lot more. It was just a lot. Yeah. It was a lot in the old systems, and I feel like they really took a lot of inspiration from shows like Supernatural, from things like, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and basic Monster Hunter kind of genres, and really toned it down, grounded it, and made it a lot more about the human experience, and kind of took away a lot more of the supernatural while making it seem attainable or realistic. And so you played Axiel Rose for the rest of the story, taking breaks here and there as one is one to do. But eventually you kind of hit a point again where you needed a change. The original group that you'd started with had kind of dissolved, as it were.
Yeah.
And so we found a way to bring you back into Vampire without losing the character, and you became Jennifer the Ghoul. So kind of talk about what the motivation there was and why you decided to return to the Vampire story while still maintaining the same character.
Well, the thing, so Axiel Rose was her mask name. That was a creation. Her actual name was Jennifer Alston. So that was her name. So bringing her over, in her backstory, she had her Domina was her ex-girlfriend who was chasing her. She wanted her back. Typical Toreador, I want what is mine. And this Toreador was making life hard for the remainder of the cell. So in her mind, for her, she was stepping in to save the cell. Because if she's not there, they're going to stop hunting them. That was her complete mindset. Give up herself to protect the others. And that was very much a lot of her who she was. But stepping in, and I very much appreciated the trust that was given to me to take on this role, because It was a big thing to do. And it was a scary thing to do in the mindset of a hunter. That first Elysium, oh my lord, the butt puckering moment you gave me when I came in front of the prince, I don't think you understand. I was sweating in and out of character because it was so different coming into Elysium as a llama and then stepping in the mindset of a human,
mm-hmm.
of a ghoul, of a hunter who knows what they did in Sarasota. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Completely terrifying, but in an amazing way.
Well, it was interesting, too, because I know that you came in around a kind of very volatile point in the story. The Beckoning storylines were going on. There was a lot of, like, it was especially intense times to be at the Elysiums and whatnot during the time. And it must have been a huge shift for you because you, like you said, you were going from the regent of the Tremere, some could say the top of the Tremere food chain in St. Pete, to the lowliest possible position a PC could take in that setting, which is the ghoul, the servant, the peon, the, you know, the meat shield, as it were, in a lot of regards. You kind of had to drop all the way, tumbling down that ladder to the bottom, while also knowing I'm here to screw these people. Like, I'm here to spy on them and fuck them over. That was incredible to me to how much you got away with it. That nobody really pursued or suspected. Nobody really pushed to try and out you. Everybody just kind of took it as rote and just let you be. And again, you got to play that more introverted, withdrawn role of just like, I'm here taking notes, writing everything you're saying down, and the amount of freedom that the PCs would have to just speak openly in front of you, to say all the things without even questioning what could have potentially bit them in the ass in the long run.
Oh, yeah. And every week, I would roll a D10. Every time the ghouling would be upheld, I would roll a D10. If it was high, I would protect the hunters. If it was low, I would protect the vampires, like the kindred. And that's how I determined my actions. And look, I'll admit, I didn't dive into the character as much as I could have. Had a lot of things going on.
Yeah, for sure.
But, there were certain players that did really push that and live into and lean into that. You are a ghoul. Get back in your box. Because you and I had numerous discussions about that. And because I know you were really wanting to make sure I was prepared for the depths that I could perceive. Because as a ghoul, you are something that you stand on. As a ghoul,
you're property. You're not an individual. Yeah. You're a piece of property owned by your domitor. Yeah. You're a tool to be used whenever necessary and just discarded and left on the bench when not necessary. It's a very intense position to take on. And I think that, you know, it's one of those roles that needs to be played with a delicacy and a grace to be played effectively. Because I think a lot of people go to like a BDSM headspace with that or take it into a creepy kind of direction. When in reality, like, it does require a subtlety and a softness on the way you express yourself, but an inner strength to be able to withstand the abuse and the disregard and the feeling lesser than. But I couldn't have thought of anyone better at the time who could take on that task and still be able to walk away with a smile and, you know, tell them to fuck themselves out of character in a good way, jokingly, of course. After the scene is over, but, you know, during the scene, be able to maintain that composure as a player and a character, as someone who should have been used to this, as someone who, you know, or to a certain point, knew what this society was like and what it was going to be like. And I thought you handled that really well.
Oh, yeah. And there was a couple of players that out of character were like, I know who you are. I know who you are. I know what you're doing. I'm going to find out. I'm like, do it in character. If you can do it in character, my hat will come off to you. There was one moment where I was waiting for it and we're doing the corridor patrols. Because she basically just got dumped with a toradol. And her dominant buggered off. Essentially. Back to where she was. And she got dumped with a toradol and they're like, here, play. The ball without a dominant in the land meetings, everything. But there was one moment during the patrols when they were doing rolls. We were doing rolls just to keep an eye on things. And they realized how high my dice pool was. And there was a moment for in-character suspicion for how observant she was. And I was waiting for that to be chased. I was waiting on it. I was like, all right, that's it. Jinx up. I'm gone. It's happening. No one chased it.
No.
And I'm like, you guys are just like, here, have this part. Here, have access to this. Have access to this. Go ahead. Do this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, now she works for Carmen Alvarez. Because Carmen kind of stepped in and went, I'm going to take this resource. Your dominator hasn't turned up. You're coming with me.
Yeah, you're mine now. And
yeah. Ownership was stolen, so now she's running around to Dodge.
So what were some of your favorite moments about playing Hunter the Masquerade? Or, I'm sorry, Hunter the Reckoning. Duh. You were playing Hunter the Masquerade as the ghoul, but
yeah.
Hunter the Reckoning, what were some of your favorite moments during that time period? Because I know one of the ones that stood out to me was your guys' kind of grand stream debut, which you can see on YouTube in one of our past episodes, which was the Assault on Sarasota. That was such a cool moment to be a part of, but what was your thought process during that, and what was kind of some of your favorite moments?
I absolutely adored that stream. I absolutely adored it. Just the storyteller calling for a dice roll, and everybody looked out at their dice, and then you pulled us all in, and they looked up and went, the panic that everybody had was hysterical. I went back and watched the Twitch chat afterwards. It exploded. And I'm like, that's what we're here for. And the sheer fear, and I know it sounds horrible, but the fear in the players' eyes when they realized what the hell was going down.
Yeah.
I know that we as hunters, we were expecting more fight back. We was totally prepared. Like, I was prepared for my character to not walk out of there.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You prepare for that as a hunter.
Oh, absolutely. Constantly.
You're gone. You know?
Yeah, you have to. You have to prepare for that.
But that moment was amazing. There was another moment after one of the, I can't even remember if we streamed it. It was the hotel that exploded.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't think that one was streamed.
No. She got really severely injured in that moment, protecting her dog. She went over her dog because she has as an emotional support papa. She went over her dog. And as a result, cop corrosive vitae all the way up the back.
Right.
Ended up in hospital for a few weeks because that's what happens when you're a hunter. You're human. And there was a really amazing touching moment between her and another player that occurred just during a fluff scene where the other player had been slightly viewed as being problematic, but it was like the start of their resolution arc that happened. And it was genuinely really amazing and touching. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't get to see, obviously, is those little fluff moments that happened in the old iteration.
Right.
That sometimes held some of the most touching moments that you can come across. So.
Yeah, and that's kind of the kind of stuff that we try to encourage with OpenRP is to have those moments and to create those moments. And it is, you're right, a lot harder to kind of capture and encapsulate that. But I think some of the stories that we have going are heading that way. And speaking of stories we have going, at the end of the iteration, the first iteration of St. Pete by Night, you made the transition into storyteller, which was very ambitious because you were filling a much-needed role as a Hunter the Reckoning storyteller. We had been lacking in that department for some time, and we're trying to work it out, and you, always the person to take the challenge, as previously mentioned, volunteered and stepped up and now are the primary hunter the Reckoning storyteller of St. Pete by Night. What was the motivation for that? What was your decision to be like, okay, I'm doing this. Like, I'm going to step up, you know, I'm going to take on this system, which at the time still, and even to this day, is still fairly new in the grand scheme of things. I mean, the system's only been out maybe a year, year and a half at this point.
Year and a half.
So you stepped up and took that. Why did you choose to take on that challenge, especially considering, and we'll talk about this shortly too, all of the other shit you balance in your life? What was kind of the motivation and driving force behind that?
Well, to be honest, it had a lot to do with conversations that I've been able to have with you in the brief moments I could catch you back then before I was a mod. And with all the chaos that was happening in the previous iteration. I had always said, no, I didn't want to do a mod work. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, nah. And then I saw the need. I saw the fact that something that I was so passionate about was struggling. Not just Hunter on St. Pete, but St. Pete itself. And I'm going to be honest, the server, yeah, it's home. You guys, and nearly all of you, are on the other side of the world, but it doesn't matter, it's home. You're not going to get rid of me unless you turn around and boot me out. You know that, right?
You've made that very clear, yes.
I saw a need that I knew that there was a chance I could fill if I could prove that I could meet the standards expected with St. Pete. And I went, stuff it. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is you'll look at me and go, no, I don't think you're ready. And I go, okay, how can I keep practicing? How can I get better? How can I learn? How can I improve? And it's that desire to continue a story that started with some amazingly talented storytellers that were running Hunter. And yourself, because you well and truly, oh my goodness, you stepped in and took up a system you knew nothing about. Like, you knew the details and the basics, but oh my good lord, the look on your face when some of the roles came through, buddy, you're like, because it is, it's crazy. It can be really insane if people know how to build their characters, but
absolutely,
I saw it and I had story ideas that would fit. And I knew I could. And I went, stuff it. I'll finally want to step in and support this amazing community that has given so much to me, whether they realize it or not. Let's go. Let's go, basically. That was the mentality of, fuck it, why not?
Well, and we got very fortunate in the fact that we did decide to take a much-needed break, that we did decide to kind of step away and reassess and reorganize. And so that kind of gave you a lot of preparation time, but you did end up getting put through a storyteller audition where you did have to run a game of Hunter the Reckoning for the staff or for several members of the mod team. What was your kind of feelings and thoughts prepping for that and going into that? Because like you said, you kind of felt very confident of like, I'll try it and see what happens. But like, especially in the days leading up to, or even the hours leading up to that audition, kind of what was that process like for you?
Buckle up for shenanigans. That's literally what was going through my head, was buckle up for shenanigans. I had, I think, 5 or 6 different things, different situations that you guys could have stepped into. Mm-hmm. Depending on the choices you made. And as always, Kent, you chose the one that I had not prepared. So most of that audition, when you guys arrived, you chose to go in at nighttime immediately from receiving. I thought, oh, no, they'll take like a night at least to recon. You were like, no, let's go. And I'm like, what? So that whole thing was all ad-lib. Mm-hmm. None of that was planned. You literally got raw poof. Straight out of my mouth that night. I had the location planned, but I had in my mind you guys were going to meet Granny the next day. Granny is a character that some of my players have now met that drove them insane, and I'll be honest, was also a nod to Bear's amazing storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So So had they gone during the day, they would have heard about the barefoot man who would sometimes bring things to Granny to take care of. It was like, I was trying to not take over Barrow's storytelling at all, ever. That man is a genius and a wizard. And oh my Lord, if I ever get that good, I will be, you know, wow. But I wanted to give a nod to the humanity of some of his characters, because that humanity is always there.
Yeah.
Even through the monstrosities. And when you guys did what you did, I'm like, right, that's it, let's go. And the way you guys thought, and just the, it was a testament to the level of quality of players that I had, of how well you guys worked together in a system you didn't know, that you just kicked ass. And I learned a few things and I got to refine my techniques, and the feedback I got was amazing, and I still take that on board and go with it now. But I wish we had recorded that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think that what really won me over, because I was trying to keep a very like critical eye on everybody who auditioned to be a storyteller, even though the need was there. Like, if anybody was talking to me during that revamp, like, I was desperate for help, which is why the revamp had to happen. And but I really did try to still take a very critical eye to it, because I do have a kind of standard that I want St. Pete to set. But you were so comfortable. Like, you seemed so comfortable with the shenanigans, with the chaos, with the entire situation, that I felt like you were just able to step in, take whatever we threw at you, not get, you know, thrown off or unnerved. And I think that's such an important part, because at the end of the day, learning mechanics takes time. That can be taught. You know, running a game with time and practice, anybody can do it. But having the ability to think on your feet, the ability to react in the moment, and the ability to keep calm and composed and still like fun loving and energetic during that whole process, I don't think that can be taught. I think that's something you have or you don't. And so I think that it really showed in that audition that you did have it. You did have the it factor that we were looking for, and still do, obviously, but had the it factor we were looking for, especially since you were going to kind of be going into this first phase of the revamp alone, with no other Hunter storytellers to kind of help balance it out or to help take off some of the burden. So what was that like, being kind of told and saddled with the responsibility of like, hey, you're our Hunter ST, and you're, for the moment at least, the only one? Did that feel like a great deal of pressure? Did that feel uncomfortable to you? Or were you, you know, kind of, what were you thinking about that?
The main pressure and the main sort of trepidation that I had was ensuring that I could, for lack of a better term, live up to the standard of storytelling that has been shown on the server. Making sure that I could give and pay homage to the stories previously there. Because there is history in Sarasota with the Hunters. There's not as much, because there was not as many players and there was not as much time played, but there was definitely a history there. And a lot of people who played on the vampire side weren't sure of it. And I wanted to make sure that I could pay that homage and I could live up to the story. But to be honest, I'm okay with it. I'm kind of crazy pottering around down in Sarasota causing chaos. That's I work well when left to my own devices. It's just as long as someone pokes their head in every now and then, goes, wait, what did you blow up today? Nothing. Just remind me that there's people there. We're good. But I've got two amazing tables, and I really do. So they make it even easier, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about those two tables, because you not only took on the mammoth task of being the Hunter storyteller, but you also decided that you were going to make room for and space for two individual cells of Hunters, one group affectionately known as New Renaissance, a.k.a. the Scoobies, and the What the Hell Was That cell. Tell us a little bit about those two tables and kind of as spoiler-free as possible a little bit about the stories or how that's all going?
Well, I'll start with What the Hell Was That There, also known as Humanity, because of where they chose to locate right. themselves up near the Manatee River. But they are more of a... I think they're more of a scholarly, spiritual team. Don't get me wrong, there's some heavy hitters there, but they are a bit more of a slow burn at this current point in time. They have a fun story that they're currently chasing around the Bradenton area. There is some definite potentials for sidewalk sitting shenanigans. And that's actually the table that one of our other storytellers is coming in as a SPC for me, which is the lovely Crafty Mirage, revisiting Dr. Kruger from the audition. Bringing in Stacey, which has been hilarious to watch happen. So I'm very curious to see where they're going to go. Very, very keen to see them slowly start to chase the stories that are coming out in front of them. My other team, my Scoobies. Oh, my goodness. New renaissance. They are intense. They are hilarious. They are full on sometimes, but I adore storytelling for them. They have made choices that I actually, one of them made me do a double take. Like, I almost did a spit take double take. I'm like, okay, we're doing that then. Cool. But I think, again, there's some amazing potentials for stories. And they are all not only chasing the cell story together, but they're all also looking into their own individual storylines and plot lines. And they really make an amazing effort to interlink themselves. So I'm genuinely excited to see where they're going to go over the next 6, 12, however many months that they're happy to have me as their storyteller. Couple of them, we'll see if they survive that long, because they keep forgetting that they're squishy and taste good with sauce. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, and speaking of the players at those tables, there it's undeniable the affection that they have for you and the enjoyment level that they've been experiencing in their games. I mean, if you've been reading this Twitch chat as we go, you can just see the hunter pride on display in our viewing audience tonight. Having started the server as a player and just as a supporter, having spent a majority of your time here so far as that, transitioning to mod for a very brief period before being thrust into the role of storyteller, did you experience any kind of whiplash? Did you experience any kind of, like, you're seeing behind the curtain and all of the chaotic machinations that need to happen to keep this crazy experiment going? And what was that? How did that feel to you?
Honestly, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was intense, but the way my brain works, there is something so satisfying about seeing all of the little details. My players will understand, and some of them are starting to notice. What you might think of as this big is connected to something this big, is connected to something this big. And there's a couple of them that are starting to put two and two together and go, huh, what? Hold on, you said, but what? And I love those little details. They are like life to my brain. I love being able to connect everything. And as you know, sometimes I notice connections that weren't there. Or I notice connections that were there, but that weren't evident to begin with. It's been crazy. It's been chaotic. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I wouldn't.
And storytelling and kind of keeping all those moving pieces in the air seems to come second nature to you, because I'm going to step away from TTRPGs and the World of Darkness for a second to talk about Cole, also known as Zoe, the person who has anywhere from seemingly 4 to 12 kids at any given time, runs a fully functioning farm for the most part, inherits animals of all different only true Australian breeds, and also goes to school simultaneously on top of all of this. How do you handle it all? How do you keep it all organized? Like, I know we have several parents amongst the mod team and the storyteller team. But for the most part, you know, it's people in their 20s who, you know, are single or married, no kids, you know, dealing with that. But you, especially with everything you have going on, somehow managed to do all the all your required responsibilities, show up to all the meetings, participate actively in the server, while also being an incredible parent, an incredible child to parents, you know, an incredible animal lover, all of these different things. How do you balance it all, and how do you stay so positive about it? Because me just managing the children of this server puts me in a headspace sometimes. How do you handle all of this that you have going on in your life? And kind of give our audience a sneak peek of just how much it is you do manage on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. Because I don't feel like I can even describe it properly. Like, I get whiplash, and my brain short circuit at the thought of it. So, go for it.
You just recap before we came in. I've got four kids. Three of them live at home. One of them is an adult, and they have moved out of home. Which is, you know, interesting that happened in the middle of this year. But three out of four of my kids are neurodivergent. I live on... It's technically classified as a hobby farm with my parents, who are 60, almost 70, and I help them manage the place. I'm often seen milking cows, milking goats, gardening, doing something random with an animal. God only knows half the time. Renovating the house slowly that I'm living in. This is the home I grew up in. And yeah, I've recently gone back to school studying Auslan, so Australian Sign Language. Because for those who know me, I am actually deaf. So that's another fun challenge I deal with every day. How do I do it? Coffee and spite.
But that's a big thing of it for me that surprises me about you is I never feel like you fully encompass a spiteful energy. Like you always have, in my perspective, a very cheerful, positive, energetic way about you that is infectious in the best possible ways, that you can kind of keep a smile on your face even on the days where you can see the like blood capsules bursting behind your eyes. Like you still manage to stay so upbeat and positive about everything and enthusiastic, to say the very least, about everything going on in your life, going on in the server, going on in all aspects of you. What are some kind of strategies you use or some motivators you use to help keep in that kind of headspace?
Being brutally honest, I'm very, very cautious about maintaining my own self-care and downtime. It's something that I very much had to learn to do. It's something that I believe is integral for anybody. You need to have, for me, sometimes, like as a parent with three of my kids being neurodivergent, it's full on, and they are high care, two of them are higher care needs. Knowing how to catch those breaks when you can, knowing that half an hour to lay down on your bed in the middle of the day is a blessing and it's a good thing. But also, it's just sort of a mentality that I've carried with me for a majority of my life. I've been through a lot of crap. And my argument is, and the way I've always looked at it is, there's always blue skies, even if they're covered by clouds sometimes. And that's how I keep going. I stop and you saw me in Florida. There's the beach. I'm getting in the water. Because it's that little moment of joy. It's those little moments. So you get people that look for the bad things that happen. And I do my best in my life to look for those little moments of joy, the laughter that a friend has, that bird that I absolutely adore. That's one of my favorite birds of all time, lorikeets. They're an Australian bird. I love them to death. And we've had a flock of them living on the property for the last month, and I love it. I walk out every morning and there's these funny little green and red and blue clowns staring at me from behind the Callistemon trees, and that makes me smile, and that gets me through. It's that remembering to take a moment to breathe, because that one breath can make the difference to how you approach something. And they're just things that I've learned over years. It's years of dealing with everything that I've dealt with. And you know what? I'm a single mom. I've got to get up in the morning and keep going. My grandma's old saying was, doesn't matter what happens, you've got to get up in the morning, wash your face, brush your teeth, and get moving.
Yeah.
Even if my day is all I do for my day, because I have chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia as well. So you've seen me on the end of a pain flare quite
absolutely.
Uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
Sometimes my successful day is I sack the dishwasher. Sometimes it's I mowed 2 acres of lawn and, you know, whippersnipped everything and trimmed 10 apple trees. So it depends on the day.
I feel like you have this ability to set very realistic goals for yourself, even though when you will state your list of things to do on a day to me, again, I can feel my soul die a little bit. You are willing to acknowledge your good days and your bad days, that you're like, today I'm going to get a lot done. I'm productive. I'm feeling good. You know, it needs to get done. And then on other days when you aren't feeling so well, you'll be like, hey, man, if I can just get my kids to school today and get them home, I'll consider that a one day. Like, that's I did it. Like, and I think that's an admirable quality that does also translate very realistically to storytelling and gaming, of just saying like, yeah, not every session is going to be a, you know, Matt Mercer level event of like crazy cliffhangers and voices and stuff like that. Maybe the bare minimum I can do today is just really have a solid conversation amongst the characters where I'm doing very little and they're really carrying it. And I think that, again, like those kind of skills translate with you. I want to take a moment to address the chat and say, hey, all of you watching right now on Twitch, on After Dark, we do ask questions from the Twitch chat to our guests at any given time. So if you have any questions for Cole, feel free to post them in the Twitch chat, and I will take a moment to ask them to her as we go along. St. Petersburg by Night is brought to you through collaborations with our partnered vendors, Wolfpack Dice, Ember Fox Dice, Dragon Ink Dice, Bera the Bard, Champs Tramps, Panchi Artista, and Chromatic Creations. Links to our partner vendors, as well as our Twitch and YouTube channels, can be found on our website, stpetebynight.com. The official theme song for St. Petersburg by Night is Vampire by Faith and Failure. You can find them at faithandfailure.com. You can follow SPBN on all socials with the hashtag StPeteByNight. If you wish to support our program, you can do so at ko-fi.com/StPeteByNight to help keep the stories rolling. So let's go back to talking about the World of Darkness, since that's what really is the binding factor, even though I think your story, your life story, is fascinating. I've told you several times you need to write a book, because just the experiences you've relayed have just, again, been mind-blowing. But what is your kind of favorite thing about the World of Darkness, the setting? I mean, you talked about it being very grounded, and that's kind of what called to you. But now with more experience and with time and education about it, what really is your favorite part of either Hunter the Reckoning or World of Darkness or both?
I suppose my favorite part of the World of Darkness as a whole is literally the ability, especially in the fifth edition versions of, because in the previous iterations, obviously a lot of the different sprites were extremely unbalanced. There's no way you could really combine a lot of them. But now looking into the fifth edition versions, I am really excited for the direction that they are taking with the ability to cross the worlds over. It is a realistic possibility now. Like, I've played and I've read W20s. I played in a short W20 campaign so far for a bit off server. I have read a lot of the older Hunter stuff and Imbuements and Awakenings and everything that goes along with that, and some of the older Vampire the Masquerade stuff. Looking at it now and the way the game is developing and moving out of some of the older mentality and mindset, stepping forward, I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it. I think it's amazing. And just, again, the ability for collaborative storytelling. My favorite part of Hunter is a desperation mechanic. I adore that. It is a mechanical viewpoint of that final adrenaline hit that you get in times of extreme crisis. It's the mother lifting a car off a baby. It's the someone running through a burning building and emerging unscathed. It's I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. Like, I love this shit. But it's that mechanic. It's the be-all and end-all, that last-ditch effort that grabs you and pulls you into that moment. And it's leaning into the strength of the character based on the build as to when they can use it. And I love that because it's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I'm going to save this person. I'm going to dive in front of them. I'm surrounded by kindred. I'm going to take this one crack with a stake, and I'm going to use that desperation and drive it through them. It's spiritually being attacked by a ghost and having that last bit of mental fortitude to shake it off. It's so many things. And the way it's portrayed and the way it's used, it definitely shows up more as you go further into the storyline. One of my tables is just starting to sort of get the point where desperation is going to start becoming relevant more for them. And that's the only clue I'm going to give them if they're listening, is desperation will start to become more relevant, guys. Read your books, learn your shit. It's going to get hectic. But that mechanic is, it's visceral, it's real, and it's giving it a place in the world. And I love that.
It was interesting to me because, like, when I first dove into 5th edition Vampire and they'd introduced the hunger mechanic, I thought it was such a cool concept to, you know, do away with blood points and to have this mechanic for hunger. And so when I started thinking as they were going to release all their splats, like, how are they going to, are they going to try to balance it in the first place? Is it going to be like the old iterations where you can't play any two splats together and have it make sense? So when Hunter came out and the desperation mechanic was introduced, I was like, this is so clever. What a clever, but also translatable mechanic that did make it balanced, that did make it that the two splats could coexist. And then I thought about Werewolf and Rage made sense. It absolutely made sense. No. And I'm thinking about like Wraith and Mage and other things coming up because it clearly is that they have a solid picture of where they're going mechanically and how it's translating between the systems. And I think that's just so cool. I was also really pleased that Hunter was the second splat. It's very unexpected seeing as, you know, Mage and Vampire and Werewolf, those have always been the top three since its inception, without a doubt. For them to take the decision to bring in Hunter second, I think was a really bold move on their behalf. Because, you know, it was taking a less popular splat and putting it to the forefront and, like, really making it their sequel, as it were, to Vampire the Masquerade. But I'm really glad they did it. And I'm glad that the Hunter system is fantastic. I have the old iteration. Never would play it. I would never play it. But the new iteration, I absolutely love. The 5th edition version, I absolutely love. And I have a respect for it. And the desperation mechanic is a very, very big part of that. So, transitioning over to the chat for a few questions, Crafty Mirage, who was previously mentioned several times already in this, asks, what's your favorite Hunter creed?
Underground.
Why?
Because It is probably one of the least used in a lot of ways, or the least underused, because an underground hunter is there to infiltrate. They can be the face, but they're very much they're a combination, if you wanted to throw it back to D&D terms, they're like a combination between a rogue and a bard. They're a bit of both. They can do both. They can be anything you need them to be. Except for physical, really. They don't do that well if you build them right. They don't do real well with that. But I feel like they're very useful in the right setting. And I think that a lot of people, again, undervalue it. So.
Okay. Hugo Boss, also known as Jay or Valerie Monet from the Don't Get Caught coterie, asks, what do you think is the greatest threat to a hunter? No ulterior motives for asking, TP Crunchyroll.
Planning. The greatest threat to a hunter is being caught without planning. One hunter cannot survive without severe levels of planning and organization. If you are not fed, you're going to die. It's simple. One vampire can take out one hunter very easily. One vampire can take out a cell easily if they don't know they're coming.
Sure.
That's the biggest threat to a hunter is their own self.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think that is. That's what gives them the edge on anything. Like, a lot of people ask us about potential PvP between hunters and vampires. And now with werewolves in the mix, it's a whole different thing. But I really think that flat-footed vampires and werewolves will wreck hunters every single time. If they are not prepared, if they are not planned and stocked and loaded and ready to go, and if they get the drop on, if they don't get the drop on something, they are in trouble. But if they have time to plan, if they have time to assess, they can pretty much take down any supernatural force as long as they make the right preparation. So I think that absolutely rings true with what your answer was. Lakar asks, let me scroll up, did you find it difficult to shift mindsets from Vampire the Masquerade to Hunter the Reckoning? We talked about this a little bit, but go into that a little bit more of, like, was it a difficult transition from thinking that, vampires are a little bit more invulnerable, they're immortal, they kind of have that endless scope of time to think from, to a very, like, hey man, we're burning hot and fast and we probably won't survive for very long, hunter mentality of, like, overwhelming odds against them. Was that kind of a difficult transition for you?
It was and it wasn't. It wasn't because I look at it from the viewpoint of, this is my life. We always make the joke I'm an Australian. It's why I'm so suited to Hunter. I live in a deathscape anyway. being honest, it's the biggest challenge about swapping from vampire to hunter is it's like swapping from vampire to D&D, but removing the ability to come back from the dead. So it's remembering that you are invulnerable. And those first few times you get hit shocks your character to the core. So it is a challenge. And that's one thing, probably the biggest challenge I find for storytelling is flicking between antagonists and protagonist SBCs sometimes. Swapping between the two can sort of give you a little bit of a mental whiplash, but it's doable. It's obviously, but it is a challenge because he's right. You are looking at it from the perspective of you're not looking into the future with, oh, I'll deal with them in 10 years if they're still around. It's, I've got 10 days.
Yeah.
Or I've got a month. Or I need to get the hell out of here because I've got 10 minutes. Whatever it so happens to be.
You definitely think about time differently. And also there's the fact that, like, there are real risks to the things you do as a hunter because they don't have regenerating capabilities. They don't have that kind of ability that only these two things will destroy me. It's everything can destroy me. Illness can destroy me. Yep. You know, a bad fall can destroy me. Everything could potentially be and speak the very end of you. And I think that that's another thing players really need to take into consideration when they're about to do something insane or over the top, is that would you really be able to do it? Because your natural instinct as a human is self-preservation. And are you going to be able to overcome that to do this crazy thing you're going to do where you're probably going to break your leg and potentially get a concussion and, you know, be out of action for months afterwards?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
flip side to it is, can it happen in the real world?
Yeah. Is it even feasible?
If you blow up a building, are you going to be able to get away with it without the police getting a hold of you? Because you don't have a whole clan behind you to cover it up. You don't have a cleanup crew like a vampire to come in and deal with your mistake.
Yeah.
You can't wipe a memory.
Yeah.
So you've got to be quick on your feet with a good cover. That's the other side to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of hunters take for granted, too, that you can't trust all other hunters. The cells, the orgs, all those things. Like, there's still that same competitive mindset as there is in Vampire of, like, yes, you know what the bad guys are, but also your own friends could still be the bad guys. Like, your own allies, your own associates could still be the bad guys. So there's a very paranoid element to it as well. So, Tekkaman, one of your players, asks, what are some of your favorite scenes from your recent Hunter games?
I know why he's asking this, and I'm pretty sure I know what he's hoping to hear. My favorite scenes from recent recent sessions, I'm going to say it, the spit take of one of my characters just going, I pull out my gun and shoot him. And I'm like, 15 minutes left of the session. We're going to close it up. It'll be great. It'll be fine. Oh, what? Oh, crap. Uh-oh. That was amazing. But I also think as well, it's funny as it sounds, for that table particularly, I loved the moment where they got together around Thanksgiving. And the jokes about tacos make me giggle every time. You want to hear an insult? You want to hear someone sound insult and mention lettuce going on a taco? And Tekka will probably yell at me in the chat in a minute. Mention lettuce going on a taco. Ooh, that was funny. But for the other table, definitely I would say, I think for them, the discovery at the Flea Barn, where they actually came in, where you had been in the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in and they were dealing with essentially Granny being stuck in a time loop. And the way they figured out how to get around that was amazing as well.
That's cool.
So both tables have had really awesome RP moments. And I think like the Humana team, which is what the hell was that? They showed an amazing amount of empathy to the character of Granny that they perhaps didn't need to, but they did. And that was a really amazing human moment as well. So
very cool. Very cool. So you are from Australia. You've lived in Australia your entire life. Your exposure to all things American is pretty limited to pop culture and probably stories from your fellow players and members of the community. The game takes place in Florida, in the United States, which you were fortunate enough to be able to visit earlier this year in January, and we were very happy to have you. What kind of challenges have you had to overcome being someone who's not from this country, but having to represent this country in your stories, having to represent, you know, what life is like in a country that you've never really lived in? Like, your experience has been that of a tourist or a viewer from, you know, again, pop culture standpoint. What have been the biggest challenges about properly representing an American environment as an Australian?
being honest, and I'm going to do my best to not get any method of political here at all. It's not my intention. The difference in gun culture and the difference in even service in restaurants. So one of the biggest challenges I held personally being when I came to visit was the lack of the words please and thank you. I don't think you understand. If you come to Oz, our culture is very much based a lot on that common courtesy. If you're rude, you will get rudeness in response. And please and thank you, that's why I say to people, please and thank you go a long way with me. But representing that when I'm portraying staff at restaurants or establishments has been challenging, which is a weird thing to think of. And as you know, I've had to tuck base and like, hey, how would you word this thing that goes in the news?
Yeah.
You don't think about, we're both English speaking countries.
Sure.
So you don't think about the little differences. Even just down to healthcare, like.
I was going to say healthcare has got to be a big, big turnabout for you as well.
But thinking about, okay, so I've got an SPC that's got a permanent limp. Why do they have a permanent limp? Because they couldn't afford to go and get something fixed at the hospital. So even down to thinking of those things going into my characters and my SPCs. But, and also, again, understanding the gun culture, because over here, you don't open carry. It doesn't happen. There is no open carry. There's nothing. No. If you don't have a license, if you do have a license, it'll be for hunting.
Right.
It's very rare to have anything else. So learning that and learning that part of the culture has been different as well.
What has been very comfortable and easy about it? Like what are some things that are like, yeah, they're the same there as they are here? Like, you know, what are some kind of easy parts about representing American culture? Because you do so respectfully, even though I think we could all say that there are plenty of things that could be stereotyped or over dramatized or possibly, like, you know, almost downright insulting to American culture, which we should own because it's probably true. But like, what have been some very easy things? Because I do think of Australia in my limited knowledge of Australia, that's the stories you've told, and Florida as being very similar. That, like, expect the unexpected, the weird shit happens here. Like, if you were to tell me that someone went out and fought a kangaroo, I'd be like, is that a Florida story or is that an Australia story? Because both could be possible. You know, what have been some of the easier parts of representing a culture that isn't your own?
There is a very common delineation between the two, and that is just that of being the human experience. It's, I don't find it very hard to be respectful towards another culture, even if it is so similar. It sounds odd, but the connection between family and friends, the loyalty that a lot of people have for the people they care about is the same no matter where you go.
Yeah.
No matter who you talk to, I've had friends and met people from all across the world, and it's a similar shared human experience. Being said, in Florida, something crazy happening is not unusual for me. I still swear some days you wonder what's going to come out of my mouth next.
I do, most days.
My life is not the normal Australian experience. And it's really not. I'm a little bit stereotypical, and that sort of stereotype sometimes. But on the flip side, both easy and hard has also been to represent the population difference. Because over here, my entire country, that is the same size as the United States, has the population of Florida.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, I mean, you've got a lot more vast open space than we do here. Like, you have your collectives, but yeah. Yeah, and I think that's also something similar, though, because you're in a warm climate. We're in a warm climate. I mean, it is 69 degrees, in Florida right now in December, whereas, you know, a lot of the rest of the country is dealing with Frozen Wasteland.
I appreciated that so much when I came to visit, because I went up to Massachusetts for 3 days and it was so cold. And then I came back and I'm like, oh, this feels like home. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we have that too, because a lot of the people who live in our state live along the coastline, because you need that breeze, you need that access to water. So I think there are a lot of similarities between us, you know, even if there are some obvious differences, I think there are a lot of similarities as well. And so I think that's kind of a benefit to you. And you felt very comfortable kind of embodying the Florida experience in your stories.
It's very similar to the Gold Coast up in Queensland. Okay. And I lived on the Gold Coast for quite a long time and in that area. So it's, there's even a place called Miami on the Gold Coast, for goodness sakes. So, you know.
So let's transition to the gross, the dirty, the underbelly of this whole thing. What are some critiques or some things that you kind of recoil at about the world of darkness, or about the systems, or about the setting, and so on and so forth? What are some things that you think that could be improved upon, or some things that, you know, maybe weren't handled the best?
I think majority of my experience being mainly in the fifth edition. That's sort of where I'm going to stick to and touch on, because I'll be honest, I did look into some of the older werewolf stuff, and as an Australian, as someone who's very much a heavy supporter of the First Nations people here in Australia, I cringed at some of the lore that they brought in. I'm very grateful for the changes they have made. I definitely think that in certain things, I think they really need to check in with people of that culture that they're trying to represent, and not just one person reading a book, but really delving deep into going and speaking to, because I know if somebody stepped into an indigenous meet or reached out to people of so many of the hundreds of different tribes here in Australia, they would be welcomed as long as they came in with respect.
Right.
And I can only speak for my country, but I don't even really speak for that. I'm not Indigenous or Torres Strait Islander. I'll make that very clear. I'm just a white voice. That's all I am. So I think that is definitely something that they have started to improve on, but there's still a long way to go. And I definitely think that even in Hunter, because in Vampire the Masquerade and in Werewolf, there's that conversation of the beast. There's that conversation with your rage, and with the ongoing or the incoming conversations around Harano and Hardlost within the W5 system, they're bringing to light a lot of impact and talk about different mental health issues. And with the recent pages that have been discussed a lot, that have been released from the upcoming new material, there's definitely that communication regarding bleed. And I think they forget with Hunter that bleed is there, because it's easy to pull sideways. It's easy to confront. It's almost easier to confront the monster. And if you don't beat that monster, it can feel crushing and defeating within your own spirit.
Well, and it's one less step in Hunter that Vampire and Werewolf and some of the other splats have, of taking a further step into fantasy or a further step into horror by you embodying the monster and you being the werewolf and you being the, you know, the changeling or whatever. In Hunter, you're just a person. Like you, the player, are just a person. And so I feel like the opportunity for bleed and the like you said, the sidestep shift is a lot closer than it would be in some of the other splats, because, you know, none of us, as far as we know, are actually werewolves. None of us, as far as we know, are actually vampires or anything like that. But we're all human. We are human. And so it's a lot easier to empathize with your character as a hunter. It's a lot easier to feel the loss and the pain and the devastation as a hunter, because they are, for all intents and purposes, for the most part, us.
They could be the person standing next to you and you wouldn't even know. I think as well, because a lot of players love to delve into that, and they will have the supernatural in their backstory, because there's usually a reason a hunter is a hunter.
Yeah.
And when you delve into that, if you are putting, say, a kindred in your backstory and you want to try and save them, that's going to be heart-wrenching.
100%.
If you have family that you think is gone, but they're really not because they got taken, it's heart-wrenching. If you have a spirit that follows you, it's that visceral grief and torment that can come from it. And if you fail, how many people are going to go down because of you?
Yeah.
Like, it's heavy. And I feel that there could be a lot more still yet, even so, given to helping people truly understand that. It's definitely a failing. I love the system we have on St. Pete where we have people that are there. I mean, I know personally I check in with my tables as much as I can. I'm like, hey, support each other, talk to each other. I've seen check-ins the next day after an intense scene in their chats, and I love that. I love that support that's grown. And again, though, I feel that they're doing a great job, but they can still improve more, like the systems as a whole. And I hope they can continue that forward movement.
Well, having been kind of involved in slash kind of a participant of the World of Darkness for 25, 30 years at this point, they've made a lot of change. It's become an international company with representation in several different countries. I think their parent company, Paradox, is based out of like the Netherlands. Like, it's not the White Wolf, all true blue American company it used to be, which, while great, it was an American company, it also had a very stunted, you know, knowledge of other cultures and countries. And I think that it has made great strides, but there's always room for improvement, because you have enough cooks in the kitchen, you're going to have enough varying experiences that you're going to have some biases show themselves. Yeah. You're going to have some ignorance show itself. And I think, again, with the pages that you brought up, coming from the upcoming Bloodstained Love book, I think it's just a misunderstanding of what they're trying to represent. I think that, you know, we've talked several times about what they mean by bleed is empathy. You know, but using the term bleed means a different thing to people who've been in the American gaming circles or in the Australian gaming circles, and therefore it can be problematic, to say the very least. But I mean, the only thing I can say, and it's by no means an excuse about the mistakes they've made in the past, is it was a different time. You know, what was to be acceptable at that time is definitely not anymore, and we see that in all media everywhere. And I talked about this in the Newcomers After Dark special. They are making progress. They are making change, and they are just as susceptible to fault as everyone else. Anyone can make a mistake. But I do think that they learn every time they do, and that they have adapted and really been able to be more sensitive to those things. So I think it's still a very much a thing worth mentioning. Absolutely. Is kind of the blindness to some of the more offensive things they've done in the past, or continue to do even in the present.
I think it's that once you know better, you do better. And as long as they continue to do that, I will say I would love to see more vampire content for Australia, but that's just personal. Because at the moment it's Perth and Adams is the main thing. I would love to see some East Coast shenanigans, because man, Toreadors on the Gold Coast, primo. Melbourne Bruja Toreador, hell yes. Hell yes.
That's one of those... Anyway. The biggest desire I have for them to kind of bring back from the older is the bi-night splats, is the localized setting-based stuff set in different cities and countries. I'd love for them to bring that back, because they are very... Lore is their strong suit. It always has been. But the 5th edition has been a lot more loosey-goosey, less... you know, detailed than the previous iterations have been. And so I would love for them to put out, a Sydney by Night, or, you know, some other multinational country representation would be great, especially since they have people in those places now. They have people in Japan. They have people in, the Netherlands and Europe. So I think it would be very cool if they did release like a Brazil by night or a Sydney by night or something like that. It would be so good to see how the world has evolved in those countries. Let's talk about the server then as well. What are the goods, the improving, and the bads you would say about the server? And I encourage full honesty. I mean, you've been one of the best critics, to be honest, of the server and have helped lead to a lot of good and necessary changes. You're never one to hold back your feelings about stuff, and that I admire, and that's why you're in the position you're in, among many other reasons, and why your voice is so valued in those meetings. What are your kind of thoughts about the server as a whole, good, bad, and ugly?
I'm gonna be honest, I still absolutely adore the server, and I always will, I think. I love the community that's there. I'm loving starting to see it slowly come back to life. I really genuinely want to encourage any players listening, use that open RP, get into it. Because it's there for you to develop your characters. You can grow your connections and grow. That's, I think, is such an important thing. And I think it's something that sets St. Pete apart from some of the other servers is there is, and we have opened up the ability for the three different splats to potentially end up in the same location.
Yep.
Without mechanics. And you've just got to rely on your wit to keep yourself rolling.
Yeah.
I definitely have seen so many improvements, especially since the revamp. I'll be honest, I'm loving having my friend back, staring straight at you, having you back and seeing you laugh and giggle a lot more. And you're still stressed, but it's definitely a different level. I think the grays have slowed down a ton.
It's a lot more manageable. It is a lot more manageable.
I was waiting for the skunk stripe to break through the red of the grays at some point. You got that stressed, but now it's, I'm definitely enjoying, as we're settling into our tables, we're settling into the new, the communication level is definitely improving on the staff side.
Yes.
And I think that's starting to trickle down and show in the rest of the server. I really do. I do feel that we could still do more.
Yeah.
I think we can always improve.
100%.
And I mean, that's the other thing I do personally. I'm always trying to improve as a storyteller, as a player, as a person, as a mod. So if anybody knows of anything that they want me to do or they think I could improve on, let me know. If you're asking me to shut up more, though, good luck. People have tried for years.
It's not something to rely on, but it's one of the reasons that I think you are so beloved is like you speak your mind. What you see is what you get. You don't misrepresent yourself or your views or your passion for things. And you love so ferociously. And that is one of the things that I adore most about you is that like you are loyal, undoubtedly. You are honest, undoubtedly. And you are, you know, you say what's on your mind, and it always comes from a good place. I do not feel like there is a lot of malice in you. I do not feel like there is a lot of, anger in you. I think there's just a desire for things to be better. Who can fault that? You know, we all want to be better. We all want to do better. And if anyone thinks that they're done improving themselves or working on certain qualities of themselves, they are horribly, horribly misguided because nobody's perfect. Everybody has their faults and flaws. And I think that World of Darkness especially represents that so well. And I think that's what calls to it to me about it as a system is that it does. It represents the dirty, gritty reality of people, even through the lens of being supernatural creatures or, you know, having this World of Darkness flair.
But it also gives you the opportunity, even through the grit and the muck and the blood and the rage and everything, to see those little moments of humanity, those little moments of peace, of joy, of everything, and show the ability to learn. Where you're going with that is there's another saying I'm going to throw back to actually my great-grandfather, oddly enough. Always used to say, once you say you know, you close your mind off to all other alternatives.
Yeah.
So saying I know means you're done. and you're not. And that's something that I do appreciate and I love about all of the staff. And I love about everybody on the server, because everybody wants to keep working. And I really endeavor, I really, really push any players that are listening who aren't in a table yet, please, please stay with us. We're getting there. We're getting there. Give us maybe after Christmas. KindredCon's coming up. It's getting a bit crazy, but I know I am working on my schedule to maybe have room for another winter. We will see. That's not a promise, but I think that's really all you can ask. And I think just as in general, thank you to you.
We've created some opportunities too for players to get involved, even if they're not at a table or part of an active chronicle at the moment. That they can still feel invested in the server and in the ongoing story and whatnot.
Yeah.
With our recent OpenRP announcements and one-shots that we're offering. But yeah, no, I feel the exact same way. I feel like if you're feeling impatient, you know, just hold on a little bit longer. Hold on. Find ways to get involved, get invested, because you really will be doing yourself a disservice if you step away too soon and don't give it an honest try, because this community is phenomenal. It is one of the greatest things I've ever been a part of and a privilege to be a part of. And I definitely agree with those sentiments. So is there anything you'd like to say to anybody who is watching or watches this back that isn't a part of the community right now? What would your sales pitch be? Or what would you kind of say to those people who are kind of still standing on the sidelines, as it were?
If you're on the fence, dip your toe in the water. Come and play. You are not going to be turned away. You are not going to be disappointed at the caliber of amazing people that are here. And don't feel like you're not good enough. Because I tell you right now, I started on this server on a Samsung 10 with a set of $5 headphones in Elysiums and massive roleplay areas. That's what I started on. So don't think that your technology is a barrier. If you can get on Discord, come and talk to us. Come and join the community. Come and get a feel. Because I can guarantee you, you will be welcomed with open arms. And you will be accepted, and there will be a place for you here.
And what about to those
who... If you join the table, we might poke you a bit, but you know.
What about to those introverts? Because you talked so fondly about bringing introverts out of their shell and like bringing them into a community. I could see a lot of culture shock and a lot of whiplash joining a community like this or a server like this when they see 100, 200 plus online people. What would you say to those people as those are kind of your people, as it were, people that you can work with really well and kind of take out into these kind of circumstances? What would you say to them about the maybe anxiety that they're feeling about joining the community?
Everybody here will be happy to work with you at the level that you are at. There are so many people within this community who have struggled socially. And yes, we seem big. Yes, we seem crazy. Yes, it can be overwhelming. And especially in previous iterations, even more so. But even now, the amount of channels that are there, again, I say, come in. Say hi. Come and just poke your toe in. If you're really, really concerned, message a mod. Message me. My DM's open always. If you want to message me on Discord, hit me up. Let's go. Let's talk. If you want someone to jump into a chat with you, if you're worried about talking, jump into Vibes and Body Doubling.
Mm-hmm.
T-pop every now and then. Just come and listen. Can't count the amount of times I've jumped into a voice chat because I'm driving somewhere and I'm just muted. I'm just listening and just enjoying the company. Because that's the other thing is we don't have to all talk as much as me.
No, not at all. And honestly, take the same advice Cole had mentioned earlier about her characters and whatnot, and just listen for a little bit. Like, hang out, linger, lurk, act like the vampire or whatever that you're going to be playing, and just absorb the information, because I think with enough time and exposure to the community, you'll find just how welcoming a place it is, and that we do all work at different paces, but we don't fault anyone for being a little more shy on the uptick, or taking their time to get invested or involved, because it is. It's a big thing. This thing's been going
Oh
for 2 years now, and it
my
is it
God,
can be
2 years.
very overwhelming, but it is worthwhile, I think, and it is worth being a part of.
Oh yeah.
Cole, any final thoughts that you'd like to give as we wrap up this amazing,
Oh my
amazing
goodness.
chat? Anything that you, any shout outs you want to make, anything you want to say to our viewers or to your family, anybody who might watch this later, just anything you want to say.
Yeah, thank you to you. A lot of people say it, but I don't think they realize or understand exactly how much you've been through for setting this place up. Without you and without the help of a few other people, I would never have even thought of traveling overseas. I would never have thought that I had the support of people that I trusted enough to go, yeah, sure, pick me up from the airport. I don't know you. Pick me up. I'm in a different country. Let's go.
We made four trips to the airport
I
together, I believe,
know, huge.
during that 2 week span.
Yeah. But like even down to every little detail, people don't realize how much little things go on behind the scenes until you step into a moderator role. The amount of work that you do, I can't think of a time where in some way you're not thinking of your server. You
Yeah.
live, eat, breathe, say, okay, recently there's been something else stealing your attention.
Valheim. Everybody should play
Yeah.
Valheim. Valheim is an amazing game, but I've only afforded that because I have people like
Yeah.
Cole, because I have people like Crafty, because I have my amazing mod team, Lakar, Leisha, Tyler, all
Yeah.
these amazing individuals. They are taking Bera, Mimic. I can't even say them all. Champ, Preston. These people have made it so that I can have a life again. And I'm so grateful for it because it was a long time coming. I mean, the reality of it was I was living, eating, breathing this all time, 80 hours plus a
Yep.
week. And it's what launched the revamp was the burnout. So, as much as I'm grateful to you guys too for it.
100%, I can't say thank you enough. And I'll never stop thanking you. And you get annoyed at me sometimes because I see you go, like, stop, stop, stop. I'm like, no. I'm always going to be that pain in the butt that says take credit for your work. Because without you driving all of this insanity, none of it would be here. So
Well, thank you.
deal with it, bitch.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for making an amazing, amazing story and time for our incredible Hunter players. And thank you for fitting us in, to be completely honest, amongst all the other chaos that is your life. I'm Kent, also known as Misha Kent on all social media, but don't worry about following me. Go follow Saint Pete by Night. We are on everything. We are on YouTube, where you can watch past episodes of Rage Across Tampa, Don't Get Caught, After Dark, the first entire iteration of the game. Go check us out there. Go watch past the episodes here on Twitch. Go check us out on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, to stay up to date on all of the information St. Pete related. Coming up, we have the next episode of Rage Across Tampa this Tuesday, where our Guru Pack is going to take their first steps into the Umbra, hoping to hunt down the Tears of Gaia to help bring back one of the two other Guru in the area who are both suffering Hurano and Hoglosk respectively, and try to bring them back from the brink while also still dealing with the repercussions of their attack on the energy facility. And where is Jester? You'll find out when you tune in to Rage Across Tampa this Tuesday. Also, we have the second episode of Don't Get Caught, Crafty Mirage's Anarch Adventure, which was very, very well received in the first episode this past Thursday. The second episode is going to be airing this Thursday, and you can check that out here on Twitch at 11 p.m. Eastern. And then we're going to have another After Dark special. What's it going to be? I don't know. You're going to have to tune in and find out, but you can stay tuned to St. Pete by Night for all social media. Again, Cole, I love you more than words can say. Thank you for joining me here tonight, and we will see you all next time on After Dark. Have a good night, everybody.
Night, everyone.
This has been a St. Petersburg by Night production. After Dark is produced in agreement with the World of Darkness and Dark Pack. The host for After Dark is Kent. Visit our website at stpetebynight.com for more information about all of our productions and how you can become part of our community. Thank you for listening. Until next time, fangs, stakes, and claws out.